So, as we have established, the Grand Rapids of 1900 was a thriving and bustling place with a steadily increasing population. Many of its residents had specifically chosen to move there, finding its isolated location in the Minnesota wilderness both appealing and challenging. Building the substantial and striking Central School was an indication of a strong sense of community pride and hopes for the future. Tourism and merchandising were underway as the town's business base expanded, but yet further development and progress faced a formidable challenge. From its beginnings, Grand Rapids had depended upon the lumbering industry and the lumberjacks as the backbone of its economy. Grand Rapids was still a logging town in 1900. But as the new century approached, it was becoming apparent that the vast pine forests that had once seemed so dependable and unending were in reality succumbing ever more rapidly to the rapacious and wasteful practices followed in the process of getting the trees cut and the logs in the river to be sent to the lumber mills far to the south. Those immutable stands of pine were in actuality approaching their demise. So what could sustain Grand Rapids once those forests were gone? Let's return to my book. In the beginning years of the new century, the transformation of Grand Rapids from a rough little logging town to a merchandising center was underway. But many in the town realized that continuing good times would have to rely on something more than serving the needs of the increasingly scattered lumberjacks rapidly depleting the great stands of pine. The solution was succinctly stated in a front-page story in the January 20th, 1900 issue of the Herald Review, which began, "The real foundation for the upbuilding of an enduring and prosperous town is not laid until such time as manufacturing industries are established or other enterprises fixed where men are employed in large numbers." Some of the town's enterprising businessmen gave much thought to the concern expressed in that article. Speculative hopes for a bright future for Grand Rapids ranged over a broad spectrum during the last years of the 19th century. There was the fanciful, as when a report that garnets had been found in the area was interpreted to mean that Grand Rapids would be a world-renowned center for polishing gems. Well, that certainly did not take place. Then there was the wishful, as when Chicago coal people were supposedly drilling and testing and finding deposits of high-quality coal not far from town. When even a Duluth newspaper glowingly reported that great wealth for people in the Grand Rapids area was imminent, hopes were all the more intensified. And obviously, there was no coal and there have been no coal mines. Then there was the downright bizarre. Could anyone really take seriously a front-page article in the Magnet that excitedly proclaimed that Grand Rapids was about to become a major canning center, especially for the production of something called pumpkin syrup? I have no idea what pumpkin syrup is, and I think it's just as well off not knowing. Maybe it's something Harry Potter would have appreciated. But at any rate, that, too, was obviously going nowhere. Some citizens voiced more realistic hopes. Agricultural possibilities were rightly emphasized as an important adjunct to the economy of Itasca County, and dairying in particular was stressed. When Superintendent Chapman, we had mentioned him last week as the one who had left his agricultural interests and turned back to forestry instead, when he made note that some of the land producing pine trees was not very suitable for agriculture, he earned the wrath of residents who believed that farming was the key to the future of Itasca County. Large mining operations on the Mesabi Iron Range east of Grand Rapids engendered much local interest. Towns such as Hibbing were booming, taking full advantage of tax monies made available by the beds of rich iron ore. But all early efforts to profitably open underground mines near Grand Rapids came to naught. The ore was of poor quality and laden with sand. When new techniques allowed successful mining on the western Mesaba in the first decade of the 20th century, the new adjacent towns of Bovee and Coleraine, 6 miles to the east, gained a direct advantage. The most practical, feasible route to stability and prosperity, some in Grand Rapids argued, was to use, to develop, the potential of the Mississippi River. Although navigation on the river had once been vitally important to the town, it was clear to most that though runs from Aiken were still regular, the day of the steamboat was ending. The time had come to use the water power of the stretch of rushing rapids where the town was located. Oh, yes, a whole new look at the river and its potential is coming about here. As early as 1857, a traveler, W.W. Winthrop, had examined the river in the area of the rapids. He found it the most interesting and romantic point on the Mississippi above St. Anthony, and he noted the possibility of furnishing a very great water power for future mills. 40 years later, in 1897, the fact that potential water power remained unused was lamented in a magnate story headlined, "Big Water Power Wasted." The article pointed out that, although we have right in the heart of town a water power of magnificent proportions that needs only to be harnessed to become useful as well as a thing of beauty, no such development was underway. Because the benefit to the community would be invaluable, the magnate urged all citizens to begin seriously thinking about ways to develop the rapids. Well, and that thinking was certainly taking place. What could be done with water power in Grand Rapids? No one disagreed with the magnate article. That the water power must be utilized was becoming ever more apparent. The establishment of a lumber mill was discussed. But that's not very practical, as the logging industry was controlled by powerful interests in the Twin Cities and elsewhere. The money and the impetus to get logs out of the woods had never come from Grand Rapids, and no particular incentive existed for those in control of the industry to back a sawmill there. And as you think about it, once lumber was being made, it would have to be shipped by rail to the south. That would add to the cost. And no, major lumber manufacturing in Grand Rapids, that just isn't going to work. So a flour milling industry was advocated by some, and several developers did inspect the site. But Minneapolis was the milling city, and to conceive of Grand Rapids in its northern woodland location as a prominent breadbasket was difficult indeed. However, with plentiful water and wood and suitable power waiting to be used, what seemed most realistic to many and what engendered much discussion in Grand Rapids in the late 1890s was a paper mill. Well, is this any more feasible than some of these other ideas? Note that plentiful water and wood were mentioned. Well, what is the wood situation here? The trees are gone. The logging days are coming to an end. But spruce had been of no interest to the lumberjacks and the loggers at all. It was smaller. It was not that suitable for lumber. And the many areas of spruce had simply been ignored. So that wood was still there. Well, spruce is the ideal wood for making paper. Its fibers are good. They're very dense. They're very strong. And so, yes, there still is valuable wood, just that would be for other purposes. And was Grand Rapids a feasible area for a paper mill? That had to be determined. It was isolated. It was far from anywhere else. But certainly, the idea, the concept of a paper mill sounds an awful lot better than pumpkin syrup. And next time, let's return to the pursuit of a paper-making mill for Grand Rapids.